Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst. I'll be your host for the next hour here on WFMU, Freeform Station of the Nation, in Jersey City, in that great state of New Jersey. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for joining me. I wanted to talk with you this evening about AI, because this is a topic that keeps coming up as one of the primary conversations in the, I guess what we would call the tech discourse or the news coverage, the conversations around technology these days. AI seems to be everywhere. And in fact, if you listened to my show last week, I had some comments after the interview with Helen Phillips about my experience in LaGuardia Airport, not going in, but walking adjacent to a WH Smith store that had these surveillance cameras on stalks that were hanging down from the ceiling. And this is being pitched as an AI-enabled shopping surveillance utopia. They don't actually use those words, of course. But it was a reminder to me that everywhere we go, we're going to be bumping up against some sort of AI-enabled nonsense of one type or another. Now, let me just say a couple of things before I really launch into this. First thing I want to say is AI means a lot of different things. The term has been around since the 1950s. I haven't gone through on this show the entire history, but back in the mid-1950s, there was a conference of computer scientists at Cornell, and this guy John McCarthy said, how about we call it artificial intelligence? And that's where it started. And I could, maybe on another show, I could tell you about the twists and turns and ups and downs and summers and winters and different approaches and many different applications of AI that have been tried, and some more successful than others, I guess, over the years. And what I'm going to be talking about tonight in AI is not so much the entire breadth and depth of AI as a discipline. I'm more talking, when I use AI, it's more shorthand in the way that the tech media uses it these days, in that AI is constantly coming after us. That's jumping ahead of the conversation a bit. It's constantly popping up in places in a very narrow set of functionalities. So, for example, generative AI. If you've played around with ChatGPT, this extruded text product generator, or if you, and there's, and the competitors like Google's Gemini and Microsoft's Copilot, there's also image generators we've talked about, there's musical generators, services like Suno and Udio that I've done shows on. Generative AI is a major driver of that narrow functionality I talked about that gets a lot of the coverage. So in other words, what I'm talking about tonight is just the most popular, quote unquote, hot applications of AI that we keep hearing about or seeing jammed into various devices or environments, like that WH Smith store. You know, I'll call that an AI-enabled piece of nonsense with the surveillance cameras on stalks that are supposed to be using AI to watch what you buy so that you can, quote unquote, just walk out. Of course, the reality is, as reported by CNBC, it looks like it's mostly human beings in India, subcontractors to Amazon, watching the feeds and manually writing in or typing in what people buy. But be that as it may, let's still call that one of those AI applications. The other thing I want to say is that I want to acknowledge that some people have found some value from those narrow AI applications recently. Whether you use a generative text thing or any of the other little AI-enabled applications and platforms and apps and stuff, some people are finding it useful in, again, some fairly narrow contexts. And I don't mean to suggest in this show that there is nothing that we will ever get out of AI. That's not my suggestion. But as I've said before, Tectonic is a balancing, the idea is to balance out the almost exclusively positive and hype-filled coverage that we get about technology in most of the media. Of course, there are exceptions, but there's such a push in corporate media to push people to get excited about AI, to accept AI, to normalize the use of AI, that we need a corrective. And that's what this show is, both Tectonic generally and this episode is meant as a corrective. So if it seems negative, welcome to the show. All right, enough about that. So the name of the show is What If No One Wants AI? That's a question I haven't heard floated much in the discourse. What if nobody actually wants this? And of course I don't mean literally no one, because there's certainly some dudes out on the West Coast who really want AI because they really want to buy a fourth or fifth mansion, which, you know, good luck with that, guys. But for the rest of us, have we considered that maybe overall, just generally speaking, we don't want what this technology is bringing to us in our society, in our families, in our communities? Have we considered that? And I want to go through some articles, some resources, some columns, whatever. I'm going to read you some excerpts and give you my take on these that I've been accumulating for, as you'll see, for a few months to suggest this is a question that we really should ask. Does anyone actually want this? And what do we do if we don't want this? So I'm going to break this up into three little sections. Okay, the first section is called The AI Bubble is Ready to Pop. And I'm going to go into exactly what it says on the label about the AI bubble. Number two out of three is going to be called AI is Being Jammed Everywhere. Okay, so one is we got a bubble that's about to pop. And two is, meantime, AI seems to be getting jammed everywhere. And then third section of three is, if nothing changes, spreading AI will ruin your day. And I'm sorry to end on a bummer note, but I'm just giving you the heads up now that this is where we're headed, because that is the nature of this corrective. I am trying to build to a point where I'm trying to convince you we really should be asking this question, do we really want this? Because if it goes as far as what the signs are showing, it's going to ruin your day. Or it's going to very, very possibly ruin your day to a major degree. Okay, so let's get started. We're going to get started with section one. It's called The AI Bubble is Ready to Pop. And what I want to say is all of these notes are on the playlist. You can get to the playlist by going to WFMU.org and clicking playlist and comments. Or you can get to the playlist by going to tectonic.fm, T-E-C-H, tonic.fm, and clicking the playlist link for September 23rd, 2024. Okay, and all of the links are there, and you'll see listener comments and so on. And you can join in the live listener chat there as well. And thanks to the listeners who are already posting comments, which I'll be able to read after the show. I cannot read and talk at the same time on this show. Sorry. So section one, the AI bubble is ready to pop. What I wanted to start with is this CNN story from last month talking about this study that was published in the Journal of Hospitality Marketing and Management. I don't know this journal, but I'm going to assume that this is one that people in hospitality marketing and management pay attention to. And they found, quoting CNN, the study found that describing a product as using AI lowers a customer's intention to buy it. And this professor at Washington State University, who I guess was a co-author of the study, said, quote, "We looked at vacuum cleaners, TVs, consumer services, health services, in every single case, the intention to buy or use the product or service was significantly lower whenever we mentioned AI in the product description. And by the way, that mention of vacuum cleaners, TVs, and so on, that gives you an idea of where we're headed about in section two about jamming AI everywhere. Well, the point here is there are signs that people are already getting tired of seeing AI everywhere. And given the countless billions, the billion upon billion of dollars being invested in AI platforms, training AI models, AI data centers, AI startups, AI this, AI that, with all of this money, and the people on the receiving end, that's us, the citizens, are beginning to say, I don't want this. This actually lowers the chance I'm going to have anything to do with your little service. That should be a wake-up call. And then we get to this other research report. This is written about by Cory Doctorow, a past guest. I think he's been on twice in the past. Cory Doctorow wrote this on August 4 in a piece called AI's Productivity Theater. Cory writes, a new research report from the Upwork Research Institute, and this is another one I'm not familiar with, but again, I assume since Cory is enthusiastic about it, this is a legitimate place for a report. A new research report from the Upwork Research Institute offers a look into the bizarre situation unfolding in workplaces with AI. The headline findings tell the whole story. Okay, ready for this? Percentage of bosses who expect that AI will make their workers more productive, 96%. Again, this is according to this study where they polled a bunch of bosses and workers. So 96% of bosses feeling good about AI making people productive. Percentage of companies that are either requiring workers to use AI or strongly encouraging workers to use AI, 85%. Whoa, already. Okay, now we get to the workers. Percentage of workers who have no idea how AI is supposed to increase their productivity, 49%. And finally, the percentage of workers who say that using AI actually decreases their productivity, 77%. And so the first percentage and the last percentage really tell a tale of two levels of awareness here. 96% of bosses expect that AI is going to make their workplaces more productive, and 77% of those workers are saying, actually, AI is hurting us. It's making us less productive. And again, this brings up the inevitable conclusion at some point in the future that this bubble is going to pop. You can't have both of those at the same time. You can't have bosses, management, investors, private equity, VCs, and everybody else investing untold billions of dollars in AI with the rest of us sitting there saying, this actually hurts. This is harming our productivity. This is not working, actually. This is making things worse. That situation cannot stand in the long run. Then we get to Goldman Sachs. Now, I don't think I have ever quoted a Goldman Sachs report, and I may never again on this show. But the reason why I want to quote or at least refer to a Goldman Sachs report is the following reason. If there is anybody out there who is motivated to hype up AI to get people excited as an investment opportunity, it would be Goldman Sachs. So if Goldman Sachs does not hype AI, if they actually say something approaching negativity, that should also raise alarm bells. See where I'm going with this? If even Goldman Sachs, of all organizations, is not behind AI, that should make the investors very nervous. And in fact, that's what happened. So we've got this column I have on the playlist Ed Zitron is writing about the Goldman AI report. This is from July 8. And Zitron writes that the Goldman report covers AI's productivity benefits, which Goldman says are likely limited, which we just heard from the Cory Doctorow piece. AI's returns, which are likely to be significantly more limited than anticipated, and AI's power demands. And by that, we're talking about the drain of electricity, and I would add the water as well, in order to run all of these AI-powered systems. And it's just going up exponentially. So Goldman is acknowledging the demands on power, the limited returns for anybody investing in AI, and the likely limited productivity benefits. And as Zitron writes, the report is significant because Goldman Sachs, like any investment bank, does not care about anyone's feelings unless doing so is profitable. It'll gladly hype anything if it thinks it'll make a buck. So for Goldman to suddenly turn on the AI movement suggests that it, Goldman Sachs, must be extremely anxious about the future of generative AI. There you have it, friends. I should note that Ed Zitron wrote a piece, if you want to dive more into this, he wrote a piece on September 16, just recently, called The Subprime AI Crisis, in which he says, I believe that the AI boom, which would be better described as a generative AI boom, is unsustainable and will ultimately collapse. And he's got a lot of detail and shows how he came to that conclusion if you're interested to dive into the weeds. The last thing I want to say about this bubble, and that'll finish up our first section, is this piece by Corey Dransfeldt back in May. Like I said, I've been holding on to these stories for months, and I'm happy to finally bring them all together for you. There's a piece called Against the Commercial Internet. And this writer, Corey Dransfeldt, writes the following. We're pursuing artificial general intelligence. It'll solve everything. Look at the industry's track record, right? They've solved all of our transportation woes. Oh, wait. They've revolutionized journalism. Oh, wait. They've lifted up musicians and solved all of their problems. Oh, wait. They've revolutionized and fixed TV and content production. Ah, wait. They've given everyone a platform for a healthy public discourse. Oh, wait. They've revolutionized work-life balance and flexibility with gig work. Oh, wait. They've revolutionized and decentralized the financial system. Oh, wait. They've created breakthrough medical technology. Oh, wait. They've revolutionized planning new cities and municipalities. Oh, wait. Don't worry, though. It'll all work out this time. Well said, Corey. I totally agree. And I think that all of this data, all of this reasoning, these arguments, these sources are pointing in one direction, which is that this AI boom or Gen AI boom, whatever we want to call it, this bubble is not going to last forever. And that's the end of section one. Think on that for a moment. And we'll be right back. And we're back. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic on WFMU. My name is Mark Hurst. I'm your host, and we are a third of the way through my show this evening, which is What If No One Wants AI? Talking about this question that I think needs to be fully engaged and is not going to be in the corporate media, but we can talk about it here, which is, what if the effects of AI are far less than what the hype claims. And worse than that, it may actually have harmful effects. And then what are we going to do with it? The first section that we went through already is called The AI Bubble is Ready to Pop. And I think you can see why I came to that conclusion. And the second section that we're going to get into now is AI is being jammed everywhere. And I want to start with, let me just say that study out of Washington State University I quoted before was talking about the researchers showing consumers vacuums with AI, TVs with AI, and so on. And you get a sense that there's so many devices out there that are touting the AI that's inside as though it's a good thing, as though people are going to be excited. Ooh, we live in the future. This has AI. I mean, how naive of the people behind those products to think that. And yet they keep on coming. And that's what this section is about, that there are so many of these devices where you're going to start seeing AI pop up. And I'm always amused to see companies that have gotten many millions of dollars in investment money to deliver these things that are just, you're going, why? Okay, case number one is The Hoop. Now, because this is a tech startup, we can't spell it Hoop, H-O-O-P. No, that would be like the old days when people actually spoke and wrote proper English. No, we have to come up with a new cutesy spelling of the word hoop, because it's not actually hoop, it's a basketball hoop with AI. And so we're going to spell this H, not H-U-P-E, no, it's H-U-U-P-E, and that's hoop. I assume that's how we're supposed to say this. And I believe this is from listener Herb. Thank you, Herb. This comes from Gothamist from September 9, 2024. The article is called, I Visited the Hoop, New York City's First Public Smart Basketball Hoop in the East Village. Okay, a pop quiz, friends. If you've been listening to the show, you know the answer to this question. When a product has the word smart in its name, what does it really mean? Who's got it? You. Yep, you're right. Surveillance. Anytime you hear about a smart device, a smartphone, a smart TV, a smart vacuum cleaner, a smart basketball hoop, you just put in the word surveillance. So what we have here is a surveillance basketball hoop. And the Gothamist article says the following. When the city unveiled its first ever smart basketball hoop last month, a host of television crews and city officials crowded into Tompkins Square Park to herald its arrival. Now, if you think that Gothamist is going to follow the crowd into the hype pit, no, that is not what's happening here. I was happy to see how this article continued. A week later, the hoop, as the gadget is called, stood alone, quite literally, on the sidelines of the court, while two friends went one-on-one at the newly refurbished dumb hoops a few feet away. And then later it says about the surveillance hoop, it displayed a no internet connection alert and was restricted to counting shots made versus shots missed. All right, so here's what's happening here. And actually, I put a photo of this surveillance hoop on the playlist if you want to take a look at it. What's happening here is we have a basketball hoop that it has the brand name, of course, prominently displayed, this H-U-U-P-E logo, and what appears to be a computer screen on the backboard. So we can no longer have a regular backboard. It has to be full of expensive electronics with who knows what kind of conflict metals and chemicals inside. But fine. You got a computer screen on the back. And what's at the top and center? Remember, it's a surveillance hoop. Yep, it's a surveillance camera. So the idea is the camera, purely for your convenience, you understand, is going to count the shots made. and count the shots missed, and I suppose upload that into the cloud. Again, totally innocently, why would they use a surveillance camera to take any other data of surveillance and upload that to the cloud for further monetization? How dare you, sir? Yes, well, that was my first thought. And of course, beyond all the surveillance, you have a basketball hoop that if there's any glitch in the internet connection, you're playing basketball on a computer screen backboard that says no internet connection. What kind of a basketball dystopia are we in? Well, apparently it's one in which this company received $11 million in funding. And the city officials, if I remember right, in the article were saying, don't worry, the city didn't pay a dollar. Hoop was generous in allowing us to install this, and they're just doing it purely out of the goodness of their hearts and also to get all the free publicity that they're going to get in New York City by installing the surveillance hoop in the East Village, which a week later nobody was playing on because they prefer the quote-unquote dumb hoop, which I think the proper way to call that is a hoop, an actual basketball hoop. There's nothing dumb about it. So yes, we're living in a world now where, oh, and by the way, what would you pay for a computer screen and a surveillance camera attached to a basketball hoop? The startup is selling it for the low introductory price of $10,000. So if you're looking to drop some coin in your backyard basketball arena, it's only $10,000. Well, if you want two for it to count the shots for a full team game, then it's going to be $20,000. But think of how fun it'll be when you have both teams of players having their data uploaded into the cloud for rendering and monetization. I know you can't wait for that. Let's go to the next story. This is from Athletech News from September 3rd. I found this story when it came out, and I find this very amusing. The headline is Kabata, I guess that's the name of the startup, Kabata sets price for AI-powered dumbbells, plans to ship this year. Okay, so Kabata is this startup apparently that is interested not in surveillance basketball hoops, but surveillance dumbbells, which is funny because they then end up being called smart dumbbells. But you know what dumbbells are? They're weights, they're hand weights that people have used. How long have human beings trained their muscles with heavy items so they can train their biceps or what have you? I mean, is it 50,000 years? Is it 100,000 years? But we really have never achieved what the human race was capable of until the year 2024, friends. It took this long for us to finally reach where humanity has been pointed this entire time, and that is to put surveillance devices inside the weights. Yes, they're not dumb dumbbells, they're smart dumbbells. And the news story, which was kind of a booster about these dumbbells, said that they use AI to count reps, track velocity, and analyze form. The dumbbells also send haptic feedback to users as they're performing movements, vibrating as sets and reps are completed, or if a form correction is required. So basically, you have a dumbbell. If you're going to do a set of 10, let's say, it'll count for you, because I tell you, and I've used dumbbells before, the hardest thing in hoisting up, let's say, a 25-pound dumbbell, the hardest thing, the thing that I just dread when I get up in the morning and I know I have to use a 25-pound dumbbell, the hardest part of it is counting the reps. If someone would just count the reps for me, then it would be easy, is what I always think when I'm at rep 8, rep 9. Like, gosh darn it, I hate counting the reps. If something would just tell me when I get to 10. Oh, it's so painful.
Oh, the counting is painful.
Yeah, so Kubota is a startup that's going to count your reps for you, and if you if it feels like your form is off, it'll vibrate. I can't wait for when they put electroshock into these things. Wrong form, human. Anyway, the Kubota startup has raised $5 million for this idea. As I said, because counting is painful. That really should be their slogan. You can have that for free, guys. Because counting is painful. Surveillance dumbbells. All right, next up is our friends at 404 Media, a site that I really appreciate. Jason Kebler is one of the co-founders. He's been on the show. Another co-founder, Joseph Cox, wrote this piece just a few days ago, September 18. Here's the headline. LinkedIn is training AI on user data before updating its terms of service. Okay, so I'm not advocating that you use LinkedIn, friends, but if you have to use LinkedIn, which, by the way, is Microsoft, I want everyone to keep in mind, LinkedIn is owned by Microsoft. So if you're on LinkedIn, all of your activity is being surveilled by Microsoft. So Microsoft is all in on AI. And so, of course, what they did was they very quietly released this new wonderful feature where they are ingesting everything that you do and type into LinkedIn into their AI training model. Because Microsoft, like all the big tech companies, is desperate for more training data. And I'm sure Microsoft looked at LinkedIn and said, look, we have millions of people typing, you know, whatever. A lot of it's nonsense, but they're typing something into LinkedIn. Let's use that to train our AI models. Okay, great. And so they added a new privacy setting, can LinkedIn and its affiliates, I mean, my goodness, they're going to be selling this off right away to their affiliates, use your personal data and content you created on LinkedIn to train Gen AI models that create content. And the options are, yes, use my data for training content creation AI models, or no, or I suppose on or off. And guess, here's another pop quiz. Guess where Microsoft LinkedIn set the default? Yep, they set it to on. So everybody on LinkedIn got rolled out that their stuff is going to be ingested by Microsoft LinkedIn AI by default without telling them that they were doing it. Like I said, friends, AI is getting jammed everywhere. Snapchat did something very similar, also in 404 Media. They're doing great work with this. This one's by Emmanuel Myberg. Snapchat reserves the right to use AI-generated images of your face in ads. Yeah, and so I don't use Snapchat, but apparently there's this My Selfie tool. Where you get to create AI-generated images trained on your own selfies. Just a bit of fun, you know, to put decorations on your face or whatever. Yeah, except that Snapchat now wants to use your face in advertising. Hey, it's monetizable. Why wouldn't they do that? And yeah, there's a setting somewhere in there where you can turn it off. But here's the thing about the Snapchat option and the LinkedIn option. When you say, for example, when you say to Microsoft LinkedIn, don't use my data to train your stupid AI engine, leave it alone. Can you trust Microsoft to honor that setting? Do you really think Microsoft is going to leave that money on the table? Or is it more likely that they're just, sorry, there was a glitch. We actually did use everyone. How would they get caught anyway? How would anyone know? It might be, you know, when you cross the street and there's the little button to cross the street to let the streetlights know that, or the walk signal know that you're there. A lot of those are just, there's nothing inside. They're placebo. And I'm wondering if these settings are the same thing. Or in a lot of elevators, the closed door button is just a blank button. There's nothing behind it. It's just a placebo. You can push it, but it doesn't actually do anything. That's what I'm afraid these settings. I don't know that they're placebos, but I would not put it past these big tech companies to not honor the wishes of the customers because they're not trustworthy, by their own behavior, you can see how untrustworthy they are. So why should we start trusting them then? All right, so we just have one section left, and we're gonna get to that first. But you know what? This is so fun. All of this news is so fun. I just wanted to play a one-minute song. I actually got this off of Jesse Jarno's Marathon Premium from 2022. I wanted to play an unusual version of Fun, Fun, Fun. Let's take a listen. That was Fun, 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 which is what this show is full of, right, friends? That was New Riders of the Purple Sage, and that was live from, I think, 1971. Anyway, I just thought we should have a little bit of levity before we go into the third section. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Tectonic. My name is Mark Hurst, and this show is called What If No One Wants AI? And I broke it into three sections to make this case that we have to be asking this question that is not getting a whole lot of coverage, which is, what if the people on the receiving end of this technology actually don't want it because it's not helpful? What if? What if? And again, I'm speaking in generalities. Some people have found this little thing helpful, that little thing helpful. But as a blanketing force over our society and our economy, I want to suggest that we should really be questioning this strongly. So the first section was about the AI bubble, which is getting ready to pop. I don't know when it's going to pop. As Ed Zitron made the case, it looks right, but it could be tomorrow, could be in a year. We don't know when it's going to pop, but there are signs. And in the meantime, section two, AI is being jammed everywhere and often in places that really don't need AI, such as basketball hoops, such as dumbbells, and such as in platforms that people might have to use, like LinkedIn, or may want to use for a bit of fun like Snapchat, and yet still AI is being layered in without people's consent and often without their knowledge to harvest their data and monetize it in ways that would horrify the users if they knew what was actually happening. And so that leads to our third section, which is, if nothing changes, spreading AI will ruin your day. And I don't just mean like another annoyance of a company like Microsoft and its LinkedIn subsidiary spying on you in yet a new and innovative way. I mean, that's much of Microsoft's business model right now, is to roll out new ways to spy on you, your family, your community, your organization, your soccer club, whatever you have. So it's that by itself is not that unusual, but there are other signs about where this is headed. I often talk about the trajectory of technology and society, and this is a trajectory comment. Where this is headed is not good, friends. It's not good. Let's start with what came out in Business Insider on September 15. Now, this is a story that got a lot of play because I guess people were surprised by it. I wasn't entirely surprised, except to see a billionaire actually, as people say, saying the quiet part out loud. But here we have in Business Insider the headline. Billionaire Larry Ellison says a vast AI-fueled surveillance system can ensure, quote, citizens will be on their best behavior, unquote. Okay, so if you don't know Larry Ellison, quite a character in Silicon Valley, one of the richest people in the world. I don't know where he is on the list, but he is a billionaire many, many times over. He's a co-founder of Oracle. And he apparently was talking to investors several days ago during an Oracle financial analyst meeting, and he talked about the future of AI. And, you know, billionaires can say whatever they want. They have complete autonomy. And by the way, they are not the subjects of the surveillance systems that they layer into society to look at the rest of us. So he can speak in a very relaxed way about the future of surveillance, which is not going to affect him, of course. And he said, as the headline said, that AI is going to usher in a new era of surveillance that will ensure, quote, citizens will be on their best behavior. Here I'm reading from Business Insider. Ellison said AI would be used in the future to constantly watch and analyze vast surveillance systems like security cameras, police body cameras, doorbell cameras, and vehicle dashboard cameras. Quote, we're going to have supervision, Ellison said. Every police officer is going to be supervised at all times, and if there's a problem, AI will report that problem and report it to the appropriate person. Here's one that I want to underline. Ellison continued, citizens will be on their best behavior because we are constantly recording and reporting everything that's going on. And if that wasn't fun enough, Ellison added that he expected AI drones to replace police cars and high-speed chases. Quote, you just have a drone follow the car. It's very simple in the age of autonomous drones. So the trajectory that we're on, friends, is that we have one of the most rich and powerful people in the tech industry, which by extension we mean practically the entire economy, telling us that he intends for there to be a future with AI everywhere that is intimately tied into surveillance, and not just surveillance like in these edge cases where we may need a camera to watch it. No. He wants surveillance everywhere for the explicit intent that citizens then will be on their best behavior. That is the definition of a surveillance state. And you have a billionaire saying it out loud that this is where he intends things to go. And I would imagine that if we heard from the other tech billionaires in Silicon Valley, if they were to say the quiet part out loud, they would say something very similar. Because, again, just looking at their behavior of the kinds of tools and platforms that they have been building and investing in for the last couple of years, AI and surveillance perfectly dovetailed. And not just for narrow use cases here or there. This is ambient AI and surveillance everywhere, watching everyone and reporting everything back to those in power. That asymmetry of power should be very, very disturbing to anyone who would like to continue to live in a non-authoritarian democracy. If I could just opine for a second. Yeah, I know this is not a perfect democracy that we live in today. My point is, it's going to turn much, much darker if we don't do something about this. Next, The Guardian reports that data center emissions are much higher than the big tech companies claim. So The thing about AI and surveillance is that it takes up a lot of data and a lot of processing energy in order to analyze all of the data, to render all of that data. And we have these spreading AI data centers all over the country. And many of them are owned by the big tech giants, Microsoft, Amazon, Google, Facebook, Meta. These are companies that are building their business models on surveillance and increasingly using AI for the surveillance. And those data centers are sucking down so much electricity and so much water that there are communities that are being affected. And even beyond that, it's doing nothing for all of their high-flown rhetoric about, oh, we're going to be net zero by 2030 or whatever the year is. No, you're not going to be net zero when you're building data centers that are using much more power than you told us before. And as The Guardian put it, the emissions are probably higher than the data than the big tech companies claim, to a degree of about 662%. 662% higher than what they claimed. And they already claimed it was going to be rather high. Look, in The Guardian is quoting Goldman Sachs. Goldman's having a banner day at Tectonic today. The Guardian article writes, AI is far more energy intensive on data centers than typical cloud-based applications. According to Goldman, a ChatGPT query needs nearly 10 times as much electricity to process as a Google search. And that leads me to the McSweeney's article, which I found very amusing. You should read this. It's from September 10. The headline is, "The Department of Energy wants you to know your conservation efforts are making a difference." I of course, a humor piece from McSweeney's, and they nailed it on this one. Here's what McSweeney says the Department of Energy wants you to know. Quote, by turning off your lights all day, every day for a month, you conserved about 1% of the energy needed for AI to generate a picture of a duck wearing sunglasses. Isn't he cute? Aside from the fact that he has the feet of a human, of course. Next, by switching all the light bulbs in your house to LED, you saved enough energy for a self-driving car to make an unprotected left-hand turn across three lanes of traffic. And finally, waking up at 4 a.m. to do your laundry conserved a ton of energy. Energy that was used by ChatGPT to help a seventh grader plagiarize his entire essay on George Orwell's 1984. Who needs to read a book on technology, totalitarianism, and propaganda anyway? Thank you, McSweeney's. You nailed it. And there's one other piece that I want to read or excerpt for you. And again, I'm talking about trajectory, places where we're not yet, but where we are pointed to go. And this is a little piece that I came across in an article back in June in The Economist. They had this briefing on AI and warfare. And boy, I could do a whole, and I probably should do a whole show just on AI and warfare and how autonomous planning and targeting and deployment of missiles and other lethal technologies, they're coming. And I think in some cases they're already here, depending on the country. Anyway, warfare goes beyond a drone with a missile that sees a little image in its computer brain and sends the missile down and obliterates whatever the target was. And we all cross our fingers and hope the AI algorithm found the bad guy and not an innocent or what have you. It goes beyond that. And here's what The Economist says. And this was just one paragraph in this long briefing, but it really stood out to me as an example of where we are headed as we build AI into every nook and cranny of our society. Quote, "There is even talk of using AI in nuclear decision-making. That is to say, nuclear missiles. The idea is that countries could not only fuse data to keep track of incoming threats, but also retaliate automatically if the political leadership is killed in a first strike. The Soviet Union's perimeter system is now rumored to be reliant on AI-driven software, says a former Soviet Air Force officer and arms control expert. And the paragraph ends this way, something I did not know. In 2023, a group of American senators even introduced a new bill, the Block Nuclear Launch by Autonomous Artificial Intelligence Act. And this is true. I put a link on the playlist. Several U.S. senators found it concerning enough, whatever they heard in their confidential briefings, to submit an actual bill asking for there to be a law that we would not launch our nuclear missiles with AI, meaning we would not use autonomous AI to push the button to start a nuclear exchange and end all life on the planet. That bill has not yet reached the floor of the Senate. It's not law. But that shows you where we are, friends. The trajectory we're on is that if it's not stopped, the spread of AI is going to go everywhere, even as far as automating the launch of technologies that will end all life on this planet. And let me tell you, if there's a nuclear war, especially if it's started by AI, that, I guarantee, will ruin your day. And so the question is, what if, just what if, no one wants this technology on the trajectory that we're on? And what should we do if we decide that we don't want these algorithms making these decisions of life and death for our species? What should we do? Perhaps on another show I can go over solutions, but I wanted to raise the question because I haven't heard it brought together like this before to talk about how the AI bubble is feverishly expanding and yet is so hollow. And AI is being jammed everywhere in places it shouldn't be and is leading us down a path towards ultimate destruction. For what? So a few more dudes can get rich. That's about all the time I have this evening. You're listening to the greatest radio station in the world, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. I've got homework for all of you. Avoid Apple, abandon Amazon, forget Facebook, and whatever you do, friends, get off Google. Have a great week.
And welcome and good evening. Welcome to another installment of It's Complicated, an hour of Prague and Prague-adjacent music. Prague rock, progressive rock, that's what I play. That's what we play here every Monday evening between the hours of 7 and 8 p.m. And I am delighted that you have all joined me this evening. Lots of great music, always. And I have a lot of great music for you. Tonight, we're going to start with, you know, I have a couple of things that are either from the mid-70s or sound like they're from the mid-70s. Basically, I'm going to play a couple things that I would call prog pop, maybe. Some examples of that would be, you know, bands like Supertramp or maybe 10cc, who, you know, occasionally veered into prog territory, but, you know, were more pop band, were more pop generally. I happen to have a couple things with me this week that I would say fall squarely into that category. So I'm going to play the two of them together up front. And the first of them is going to be a group called Cerro Girón. They were from Argentina. And we're going to hear a recording from 1979 with a really long, an album with a really long title. Let me get back to you on that. But the track we're going to hear is Canción de Hollywood, a song of Hollywood. I guess I managed to figure that out. And again, these guys are from Argentina. That's the name of the band, Cerro Girón, not a person, not a member. And I'm going to follow that up with Hudson Ford. Hudson Ford is the band name, but it's named after the two leaders of the band, namely Richard Hudson and John Ford. And they were members of the group Straubs, who themselves, started out as a folk band or even like a bluegrass band, and then went heavy, heavy prog at some point in the 70s, the Straubs, that is. Hudson and Ford were two, refugees from the Straubs. They left the group in 1973 or so and started this band, this eponymous group, Hudson Ford. So we're going to hear them afterwards. And that also, I would say, falls in the same category, kind of gently proggy. So first will be Cerro Girón from Argentina, 1979, and I'm going to follow that with something from Hudson Ford.
Es el fin de una comedia americana, un jardín, dos que se aman, música para violín, luz de paz, el cielo es tan azul pintado, la ciudad. Ya se dirán desilusiones como el primer amor. Hollywood está desierto, tengo que volver al sol. ¿Quién querrá tu corazón?
Thank you.